Hey, everybody, this is Pierre Quinn, and you're listening to the Leading While Green podcast, where my mission is to help you live, learn, and lead with confidence. On this episode of the podcast, episode number 16, I'll talk about how I almost destroyed Thanksgiving, the challenge with typical Black Friday shopping, why you should be careful of the comments, and some encouragement to never give up. So, listen up. So we had a great time for Thanksgiving at our house, and we just had family just piled in here. I think there were 17 of us, 18 of us, 19 of us. I don't know. There were children everywhere. There were adults everywhere. And we had a good time for 3 or 4 days with family. And fortunately, we were blessed enough that we didn't kill each other. We survived. And it was a good experience with family, mostly my wife's side of the family, over the Thanksgiving holiday. But I wanted to really confess to you, I really love you guys, my podcast listeners. Wanted to confess to you that I almost single-handedly destroyed Thanksgiving. That's right. I almost single-handedly destroyed Thanksgiving. Now, when you think about the favorite Thanksgiving dishes, those that are on the list that must-haves, I think for a lot of people, you know, that turkey is a must-have. Thanksgiving, part of the Thanksgiving meal. For some people, it's the candied yams or sweet potatoes are a part of it's that must have. Like, it's not Thanksgiving without it. For some people, it's not Thanksgiving without sweet potato pie. Some of you like pumpkin pie. I'm not quite sure what to say about you or how to diagnose you, but been a sweet potato pie guy my entire life. So there's a lot of people who think, you know, sweet potato pie is you just gotta have it. You just gotta have it. It's not Thanksgiving without sweet potato pie. And then there are some people who say, listen, we gotta have turkey. Yeah, we gotta have candied yams or sweet potatoes. We got to do something different with the sweet potatoes so that we can turn them into sweet potato pie. But listen, you absolutely positively cannot have Thanksgiving dinner without macaroni and cheese. Now, I know we got different names for it, baked macaroni, macaroni pie. We're not talking about the stuff that you cook on top of the stove once you just melt the cheese and you serve it with sort of a wet texture. No, we're not talking about that. We're talking about the macaroni and cheese that you put in the oven and it gets, you know, a little dark on top, a little crunchy around the edges. We're talking about that macaroni and cheese. There's no Thanksgiving without that macaroni and cheese. And so here's the Cliff Notes version of this story. I had some chicken in the oven because we were cooking some chickens. It was a couple of hours before Thanksgiving dinner. We had some chickens in the oven. My wife was finishing off. Well, I think the macaroni and cheese had been in the oven for about 10, 15 minutes. It hadn't really even started to come together yet. Yeah, mixed it, spending our time mixing it and melting the cheese and putting our seasoning, spices in and all that stuff. So it was inside the oven and I was had some chicken in the oven and I was trying to get the chicken kind of, you know, prepped a little, doing my thing with the chicken. And I go to the oven and I say, okay, macaroni and cheese has been cooking for a little while. Let me put the macaroni and cheese on the bottom rack of the oven. And I'll put the chicken on top rack of the oven. No. Or maybe it was the other way around. No. I was trying to put the macaroni and cheese on the bottom and chicken on the top. Yeah, that's what happened. And as I was holding the pan for the macaroni and cheese, and I didn't have the little mittens. I was just using 2 kitchen towels, as I always do in the kitchen. Usually you just grab a kitchen towel, you grab the pan by the edge and you move it around. No big deal, right? Well, as I was holding the pan of macaroni and cheese, the pan slipped out of my fingers, slipped out of my hands. Like, I'm holding it on the corners the way I normally do. And I have these kitchen towels and it just slips out of my fingers. And you could have heard a pin drop. There are a few people in the kitchen and you could have heard a pin drop as the entire pan just in one pile just fell on top of the kitchen mat we had on the kitchen floor. And I think I stood there for about 10, 15 seconds. I think some people in the kitchen wanted to start crying because we were anticipating the taste of that macaroni and cheese. And I felt terrible. I felt terrible as I had to scoop this pile of macaroni and cheese off of the kitchen mat and into the trash and this collective sigh. And I think shortly after I dropped it, my daughters came in the kitchen and said, "What happened?" And they looked down at the floor and they saw the macaroni and cheese and they said, "What are we gonna do?" And they were authentically upset. So, you know, luckily enough for me, my wife was willing to jump back into the kitchen and to mix up another pan of macaroni and cheese. And she kept saying, you know, "This is not going to be as good as the first one, but at least we have one." And just having to wrestle with the rest of the day, knowing that I messed up, like I almost messed up Thanksgiving dinner. And that's the thing about messing up. It's a choice in how you recover. Now, we're talking about Thanksgiving dinner. It's a big thing. Family around, friends are around. And I know it's macaroni and cheese. You know, it's kind of a first world problem. But it's a staple of Thanksgiving dinners across the country. And it was very important for me because I felt bad. I felt terrible. How did I recover from that? How do you get leadership principles out of dropping macaroni and cheese? Number one, embrace the fact that you messed up. Like, this was my fault. It was no one else's fault. I could have said, "Okay, babe, you should have did the double pan because those aluminum pans that they sell at the store are a little flimsy. You should have did this. You should have did that." But no, it was my fault. I dropped the macaroni and cheese. Number two, clean up what you messed up. I literally got down on my hands and knees and cleaned up the mess. It became a mess after it hit the floor and wiped down and scrubbed the mat and put the mess into the trash. And then three, I offered to help fix it. Now, I can't make macaroni and cheese like my wife, but I can help. I can start the water. I can stir the noodles. I can check on it once it's in the oven again. So when it's a major fail, you know, own it, embrace it. Don't try to pass the buck and put it off on somebody else. Say, "Yeah, I did it. I messed up." And then clean up what you messed up. What's the process like for cleaning it up? What's the process like for getting past the confusion and the calamity and disappointment? And then three, offer to make it right. Ask how can you help make this thing right again. So that's what I got from dropping the macaroni and cheese. Well, the day after Thanksgiving is, at least in the United States, is this day called Black Friday. Now, with my two brothers-in-law, we sat at the table for a long time discussing Black Friday and what we term really is it's kind of a Black Friday hustle for people, for the astute shopper, recognizing if what you're getting is actually a deal. But every single year on social media, and long before social media was just news broadcast, they would show you the people who storm the stores. They stay out all night. They stay in line just to get Black Friday deals, and they storm the stores. And the most intriguing thing about people storming the stores really are the fights that break out over things that don't really matter in the grand scheme of things. Fighting over TVs, fighting over laptops, over phones, over just fighting over electronics mostly. Fighting, actual fist fights, dragging people out, stomping people, getting upset, cussing people out over a Black Friday special. And I thought about that. I thought about that because I was having a conversation with some church leaders a couple of days later, and we were talking about what would life look like if people actually were able to monetize the time that they spent waiting for the Black Friday deal outside. Now, I got nothing against Black Friday, got nothing against companies trying to make their money, got nothing against Cyber Monday, got nothing against finding a good deal. But what would it look like to monetize your time? And are the savings that you received by standing in the Black Friday line, Are they worth it when you think about how long you actually had to wait for it? And I think we have a challenge in our society, in our culture. We have a challenge of running to the wrong things or running for the wrong things. They're running inside just to get a TV, just to get a gaming system, just to get a phone that was on sale. But we also have this habit of using the right effort for the wrong thing. So conversely, we have this energy, we have this excitement, but we don't direct it towards the right things. And what would it look like? I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking about there are some people who stood in line on Black Friday who could have used that time to work on their next project, could have used that time to get their resume together. They could have used that time to strategize on how their team is going to be better, how they're going to lead better. Some people spent hours, 12 hours, depending on what time you were there. I remember on Thanksgiving Day, we ran out to get some plates at Walmart, and this was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and there were people already in line. Now, I think that Walmart had a Thanksgiving night, Black Friday thing, but I'm not sure. But whatever it is, it caused them to leave the time with their friends and family to stand in line. And how could you be better served if you could get that 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 12 hours back? Hours that many people are going to wish they had as the year ends and we teeter into the beginning of the year. And we're always talking about, I don't have enough time. I don't have enough time to work on this. I don't have enough time to start that. I don't have enough time to research this. Well, you had 12 hours waiting outside of Best Buy, waiting for Black Friday. And how can we shift our thinking, and not just our thinking, but the thinking of the people close to us and the thinking of our teams? We got the effort. But how can we move? How can we shift that effort to being in the right place? Speaking of having the right effort in the right place, I was sitting down with some friends of mine who are relatively famous. Okay, I don't know if you would consider them famous at all, but they have a video on YouTube that has gone viral. It's been, since they've uploaded it, it's about 2 million views on YouTube. I'll put the video in the show notes so you can check it out. And basically, it was a video about them surprising their children on a trip to Disney World. And I asked them about the experience from time to time, and they said, you know, they were just shocked, amazed that the whole thing went viral, and they never intended really for it to go viral. It was really something they just were just making for family and friends. But it you know, video public and close to 2 million views later, yeah, they're viral. You know, that's in our social media age, that's a pretty big deal, pretty big accomplishment. So real cool people, real nice family. We enjoy hanging out with them. As we talk about this experience of having this video that's going viral, one of the things that really gets to them is when they talk about or when they reference the comment section of the video. They reference the comment section of the video and they talk about how the comment section, people have said some of the most mean and hateful things in the comments of this video. I was reading some of the comments and I was just thrown back, partially because I've known them for a little bit over a year now. And the comments really just, they were out of context. They were just mean. They were trolling. That's the term when you just get on someone's social media feed or thread and just start saying reckless stuff. It's called trolling. The people saying all of these crazy things about them and about their family and about what they thought and about this, that, and the other that were totally out of context. The only thing they saw, and I think the video was really short. I think it was 2 or 3 minutes. I don't know. When you check the show notes, you'll see, and click on the video, you'll see. Rather short video, and all of this conjecture about their life, and from a 2 to 3 minute video, and there's thousands of these comments, and I'm trying to figure out, where do you have the energy to do that? I mean, we got the right, we have energy. We have the right effort, but we're putting it in the wrong place. We're putting it towards commentary on someone else's life that they only give us a snapshot of. And the video was meant to be humorous. It was meant to be funny. It was meant to garner laughs. I thought it was funny personally. But we put all of this effort, and it's amazing. And I think I put this on Instagram. I want to challenge people to spend more time creating than you do critiquing. Now, if you're a paid critic, like if you're a paid food critic, if you're a paid movie critic, if you're one of those judges on those reality singing competitions and they pay you to give your opinion on someone's performance, I think that's different. But we are not paid to provide commentary on the lives of other people. Most of us aren't. We're not paid to provide commentary. And for those of us who are in a capacity of leadership where we have to critique or look at people's work performance, I think that's a totally different like sphere that we're talking about there. We're just talking about in day-to-day life, how much we spend time and energy making comments on people's lives, on what they drive, on what they wear, on how they do their hair, on where they choose to go on vacation, or what program they're studying in school, and what they're buying at the store. I mean, just all of this stuff, all of this energy that we're wasting on things that don't have a significant impact in the long run. And I want to tell you, especially heading into 2018, if you want to be a more impactful leader, if you want to be a more impactful leader, and I'm pretty sure I said this a few podcast episodes ago, you need to spend more time creating your own stuff and building your own platform and building your own influence than you do critiquing what other people are doing. You got to spend more time building up. Spend more time trying. And I know you're listening to this and you say, I'm scared and I'm not quite sure how I feel about that. I'm not quite sure I'm up for the challenge. Well, if that's the case, it's a bigger responsibility on you really to keep your mouth shut as you're watching what other people do. Sure, their song may not be great, but they wrote the song and they performed it. Sure, their book may not be a bestseller, but they wrote it and they published it. Sure, their outfit might not be the best, but they designed it. Sure, their hair might not be the best, but they styled their own hair. I mean, we're giving commentary on something that someone else has done. Instead of taking that energy, instead of taking that effort and putting it toward our own projects and our own initiatives. And man, for all my trolls out there, yeah, just man, chill. I mean, chill. That's just not a way to live. You can't possibly be happy spending your entire life just critiquing and throwing comments at everybody else. And here's another thing that I want to share before I move on. You are in no way obligated to respond to the trolls in your life. And now we're not just talking about social media. And I know how you get. Sometimes we just want to shut people down. We want to tell people, you know, where we come from. We want to give them a piece of our attitude. You are in no way obligated to respond to the trolls in your life. No way obligated. You're no way obligated to respond to the trolls of your leadership. And sometimes it's better if you ignore the comments. You got to ignore some of these comments, the ones that are not constructive, the ones that are not true, the ones that are not going to help you grow, the ones that are not going to help you make a difference. You got to ignore those comments, because honestly, some people complain just to complain, and the complaint has nothing to do with you personally. If it was somebody else in that role or responsibility, if it was somebody else who made a video, if it was somebody else eating in the restaurant, they would complain just the same. So some of these comments, listen, some of these, and I know people are disparaging and they put things on and people egg them on. It's kind of growing up. Kind of how it was growing up before this whole social media thing. I'm an 80s baby, where you would be in public and somebody would say something about you or about your family or about your mom. And those watching would say, ooh, ooh, try to egg the conversation on, try to really agitate you so that you would fight. And I learned that you don't have to respond. You don't have to respond to the people who are consistently trying to agitate you. Now, every once in a while, I'll be honest, every once in a while, you got to shut people down. You have to let people know that they can't treat you that way. But if you try to spend your entire life fighting back against the negative comments or disparaging comments about you, you will lose that battle. And some comments you're better off ignoring, because when you give attention, you kind of fan the flames and keep people going. So I got one more thing to share with you on this podcast, and it comes from college basketball. Now, I'm a basketball guy. I've let you know this on this podcast several times, and I really prefer, I have a slight preference for college basketball than I do for the NBA, partially because of the intensity of the college basketball game for 40 minutes versus, I mean, when you watch an NBA game, you can watch the players just take plays off and just kind of check out, kind of just casually stroll up and down the court. And I don't understand it. Maybe it's partially because you've reached the pinnacle of success. You're playing at the highest level of basketball. You're making millions of dollars. Or maybe it's just a different reason altogether. Maybe just you were having a bad day or a bad night or something else was going on in your head. Anyway, I give the slight edge to college basketball because I like the intensity of the games, and I'm looking forward to March Madness. I watch quite a few games during March Madness. I don't do brackets anymore, predicting who the winner would be, but I do pay pretty good interest to the game. Now, last Saturday night, it was November 25th. The University of Alabama men's basketball team was playing against the University of Minnesota men's basketball team. And I'll put a link to this story and video in the show notes so you can check up on this. So near the end of the game, there was a fight. And because of the fight, the entire bench for the University of Alabama was ejected from the game. I can't remember how much in the second half, how early in the second half this occurred, but the entire bench was kicked out of the game. So University of Alabama has to play the rest of the game with five players. Well, while they're trying to play the game with five players, two foul out. Is it one or two? Well, players foul out. I remember seeing in the video, they walk off the court. And for the last few minutes of the game, listen to this. For the last few minutes of the game, I think it was more than 10 minutes. The University of Alabama is playing a basketball game, the game that's designed to be 5-on-5. They're playing the basketball game with three players. They're playing the basketball game. Are you listening to me? 5-on-5 basketball. They only have three players left. And one of those players happens to be a guy by the name of Colin Sexton, who just lit up the University of Minnesota. Now, the University of Alabama did not win that game. And you didn't really expect them to win because they only had three players. But what was unexpected was the final score of the game. The final score of the game was 89-84. Did you hear me? The final score of the game was 89-84, and the University of Alabama lost the game by only five points, playing a good chunk of the game with only three players. And if you watch this game, they developed this strategy, and watching the last few minutes of this game, Colin Sexton just went crazy, just went nuts. He was hitting everything. But what would it have looked like had Colin and his other two teammates given up when they were the only three players on the court? Only three players on the court. What would it look like if they had given up? Odds are insurmountable. Everyone's saying just walk off the court, just give the game up. But I think Colin scored 40 points that night. Yeah, 40 points in a loss, but 40 points in a tremendous amount of heart. 40 points in a demonstration that I'm not going to quit. 40 points. I know the odds are stacked against me, but I'm going to keep going. And I'm telling you, they're going to talk about that story for the rest of the year and even for years to come, how the University of Alabama only lost the game by 5 points. Not the University of Alabama won. University of Minnesota won by five. Nope. The story is how the University of Alabama lost by 5 points, and they only had three players left at the end of the game, and Colin Sexton scored 40 points. What I'm really looking forward to is the next game for the University of Alabama. I believe they play tonight, November 29th is today's date. I believe they play tonight. And I'm looking forward to watching how what Colin and his teammates, just their intentionality and their perseverance, how that rubs off for their team for the next game. How those players that were ejected were watching from the locker room and cheering them on and chomping at the bit to get back in the game. And how that's going to create a dramatic carrier. I don't do predictions. I don't do sports betting, but I think University of Alabama is going to come out with an amazing resolve and play extremely hard. I think the rest of the players on the team are going to have to make it up to those three guys and give it their very best. And I want to see the score. If I remember, on next week's podcast, we'll reference and talk about what the score of the game was in this game after that epic game of finishing with only three players and only losing by 5 points. But it's a reminder to us, just keep going. Keep going, even if you're in what seems like a losing battle and a negative outcome, keep going and keep fighting, because how you carry yourself in the moments where you fail, how you carry yourself in the moments of a loss, have an impact. They sometimes even have a greater impact than how you carry yourself in a win. How do you carry yourself after you drop the macaroni and cheese and almost destroy Thanksgiving dinner? How do you carry yourself when you mess up the project, when you mess up the program, when you mess up the initiative? How do you carry yourself when you bomb a speech? How do you carry yourself when you drop the ball and it was your mistake? Do you pick yourself up? Do you keep fighting? Do you keep growing? Do you keep trying? Or do you give up? And conventional wisdom says University of Alabama should have given up when there were only three players left. But they didn't. They kept going and they played to the end. And I want to challenge you to play to the end. I have no idea what you're working on right now. And I know I do know my fair share of failure. I know my fair share of starting projects and being so excited about the project and releasing the project and nobody being interested in it, nobody buying it. I did a couple of book signings where nobody showed up. I think I had a book signing. One of my friends went with me and we had two people in the audience and we drove 2 hours to get there. So I know what it's like to bomb a presentation, to walk away having people saying, now what exactly was that? I know how it is to miss a deadline or to mess up in a big, big project. But how you pick yourself up in those moments and how you keep going really has a lasting impact on the world around you. And try to stay consistent. Consistency is key. That's why I'm coming to you every week with some insights to help you live, learn, and lead with confidence. And also to help you kickstart 2018 as a leader, I want you to download my 2018 Leaders New Year Action Guide. You can see that on the show notes. You can see that on my blog, prcquinn.com. A set of questions to answer, a series of phases to help you make better decisions in 2018, because good leadership is all about the decisions that you make. Hey, that's all I got for this episode of the Leading While Green podcast, where my mission is to help you live, learn, and lead with confidence. Hope you've enjoyed this episode and all of the ones that have come before this. And I want to challenge you to leave me a review on iTunes. Appreciate all the reviews that I've received so far. But the more reviews I get, the more that we can help the rest of the world become better leaders. So leave me a review on iTunes and check out my blog, prcquinn.com. For more leadership insights. Until then, take care and God bless.